from San Francisco, California, with your host, Ben Kaspic. This is Locked On Giants Baseball. Welcome back to Locked On Giants Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. My name is Ben Kaspic, and I'm thrilled to be with you again today. On this show, we provide daily episodes Monday through Friday, approximately 15 minutes in length, talking about the San Francisco Giants in a way that's data-driven and rational, but also insightful and easily digestible, easy for everyone to understand. On today's show, we're going to do another edition of the Giants Mailbag. So just jumping right in, Andrew Bader says, I'm interested to hear both historical as well as prospective salary dump for prospects. So this is a good one. I think going back in history and seeing, you know, the precedent for some of these types of deals is a very interesting idea. The first big one that jumps off the page, and if you follow me on Twitter, you saw me mention this one, was the 2012 crazy trade between the Red Sox and the Dodgers, where Adrian Gonzalez, Carl Crawford, and Josh Beckett went from the Red Sox to the Dodgers. Meanwhile, LA agreed to pay $258 million of the $270 million owed to those players. Adrian Gonzalez was in year one of a seven-year, $154 million contract. Josh Beckett was in year two of a four-year, $68 million deal, and Carl Crawford was in year two of a seven-year, $142 million deal. In this trade, the Dodgers also acquired Nick Punto and sent James Loney, Ruby De La Rosa, Alan Webster, Jerry Sands, and Ivan De Jesus. So except for James Loney, those players never really ended up amounting to much, and James Loney really was on the downward end of his career at that point too. But anyway, the main point of the deal for Boston was that they cleared $258 of $270 million owed from 2012 through 2018. So the reason I'm talking about this deal in detail is that it's like an outlier, and I think the game has changed so much since that point. And we can point to several recent examples in rumors, at least, of why the game has changed. But so the Dodgers ended up paying $258 million, and from the players they got a combined 15 wins above replacement, approximately. So that comes out to them paying $17 million per win above replacement, which is just a massive overpay. As much as that deal was celebrated by people around the industry and their fans, it ended up not working out well for the Dodgers. And the Red Sox actually won the World Series the next season using a lot of the freed up money to add in the offseason following that salary dump. So anyway, the point is, you're never going to see that again, where a team agrees to take on $250+ million for, you know, an aging first baseman, a first baseman in his 30s, in Gonzalez, an injured Carl Crawford who was not playing and was in year two of a massive deal. Year one was a big disappointment. And the rest of the deal ended up being a big disappointment, and the Dodgers eventually just cut bait, even though they still owed him a lot of money. And Josh Beckett was never impactful for the Dodgers, and Nick Punto, obviously not even a very good player. So nowadays, if a team was acquiring that type of money and agreeing to pay all of it, the team paying all that money would be the one who would want to be compensated in the form of prospects and young players. And we've seen that this offseason in rumors when we've heard about, you know, the Red Sox looking to trade David Price, for an example. We're talking about them needing to attach a player as good as Andrew Benintendi, for example. I don't think they would do that. I think that's too much. But, you know, we're no longer saying just David Price is worth whatever it takes because of what he did in the past. We're looking ahead, factoring in the aging curve, looking at projections a little more seriously. And any team taking on that money would expect to get something back. And, you know, the same can be said in these Nolan Arenado rumors, where everybody will agree that in order for the Rockies to be able to move that contract, they're going to have to pay down a significant amount of it. Otherwise, no team is going to be willing to give up much in return. That being said, the Dodgers didn't really give up much, but I just think the tables have turned. So if we look to more recent examples, there aren't that many, but we can look at the Giants getting fleeced a little bit in the Evan Longoria trade. That, for the Rays, was a little bit of a salary dump. Although I think they sold at the perfect moment where a team like the Giants still thought he had some real value and upside. But as we've seen, and as the Giants are still committed for three more seasons to Longoria, it was a deal that the Rays were, I'm sure, thrilled to get out from underneath. So the Rays paid down a little bit of the Longoria contract to the point where it's actually reasonable for the Giants. They also took Denard Span from the Giants, which additionally offset some more money because the Giants at that point were trying to stay under the luxury tax threshold. So the Rays paid some cash and they took Denard Span. But the Giants had to give up Christian Arroyo, who was then one of their best prospects. Arroyo has since kind of fizzled out and was actually traded again to the Indians. But make no mistake, it was mostly for them a salary dump deal for Longoria. Perhaps the best example is when the Braves acquired Bronson Arroyo in a trade with the Diamondbacks, and the Diamondbacks agreed to attach their 2014 first-round draft pick, Touki Toussaint. So this is just a year after they drafted him in the first round. They traded him essentially in order to get the Braves to take Bronson Arroyo off their hands. Arroyo was 38, recovering from Tommy John surgery, and in year two of a $23.5 million contract that included a $9.5 million buyout. So that trade actually closely resembles the Giants' deal for Will Wilson in acquiring Zach Cozart. The money is pretty similar, and the first-round draft pick, who was their number five prospect according to Baseball America, being involved in the deal is similar to Will Wilson as well. Other than that, I'm having a hard time remembering many more of these deals. So if you can remember any more of these types of trades, please let me know. I know the Dodgers have been involved in several complicated deals involving money, but none of them look like pure salary dumps. Last year, their trade, you know, of Alex Wood, Yasiel Puig, and Matt Kemp to the Reds had a lot to do with clearing up some financial space. But they also are the team that received prospects in that deal. So projecting forward, what do the Giants have at their disposal here if they continue to make moves like the one with Cozart and Will Wilson? By the way, I think the Cozart-Will Wilson deal might be my favorite of any of those trades I mentioned for the team taking on the bad contract. But there's more of those opportunities to be had. I think it's kind of a new direction for the game. That's kind of my point of looking back and saying there aren't a lot of examples of this type of trade. I think it's a new thing that, you know, a smart person like Farhan Zaidi is going to be on the cutting edge of trying to make this type of deal. And there are other opportunities, including I think the Chicago Cubs make a lot of sense, as do the New York Yankees and Boston Red Sox. So on the Cubs, they've got a perfect target in Tyler Chatwood. Similar to Zach Cozart, Chatwood is making $13 million in 2020, after which time he will be a free agent. So for the Giants, you know, there's like no risk beyond 2020. You're just agreeing to pay and relieve the Cubs of that $13 million for one season. The big question is, what would the Cubs be willing to give up for just $13 million? To me, the guy who just keeps standing out for the Chicago Cubs is Ian Happ, but I don't think the Cubs want to give him up, and I especially don't think they'd want to give him up for just $13 million of relief. And so I then turn to who else could the Giants take on from the Cubs in order to get them to give up Ian Happ? And it's really hard to say. I mean, one person who might make sense is Craig Kimbrell, who's owed $16 million in each of the next two seasons, plus a $1 million buyout of a vesting option for 2022. So $33 million guaranteed over the next 2 years. And he only has a partial no-trade clause. He may block deals to eight clubs, and he's already designated those teams as of Halloween of 2019. So the reason the Cubs might look to move Kimbrell is that he was absolutely atrocious for them after he signed with them mid-season in 2019. He really, really struggled. Now, I still don't think the Cubs are going to be motivated to move Ian Happ, but they have been very clear that they're interested in freeing up some money, and the Giants are certainly going to be a team that wants to get involved. For the Yankees, I think the best and perhaps only real fit in a salary dump deal would be Jay Happ. Hap is owed $17 million in 2020 and has a $17 million vesting option for 2021 that becomes guaranteed with 165 innings or 27 starts in 2020. So what could you get the Yankees to give up? That's the big question. I think the Yankees have plenty of interesting prospects that the Giants would be interested in, with the toolsy Esteban Florial among them, a left-handed hitting center fielder. I also wonder about the Giants' interest in Clint Frazier. And I wonder, honestly, about the Yankees' interest in Clint Frazier. We've talked about him a lot on this show. I think he makes sense for the Giants, right-handed hitting corner outfielder with power, yet flawed defensively. And the Yankees, I don't know what their plan is with him. He's been in the majors, and then they've sent him down and kept him down. So it feels like they either need to trade him or give him a chance, and it doesn't look like they're doing either. I honestly don't know how to value Clint Frazier. I think at a certain point, his value is actually a lot less than we think, and maybe wouldn't even be enough for the Giants in a deal in which they acquire and take on $17 million for Jay Happ. Anyway, we devoted a lot of time to that question, so we're going to have to move on to the second half of the show, in which we'll continue to answer your questions from Twitter on this edition of the Giants Mailbag. So that's all coming up next, but first... Okay, as promised, here in the second half of the show, going to continue answering your questions from the Giants Mailbag. Next question comes from Davis Chili, who says, do you see the Twins as a possible trade match for dealing a Longo-Samardzija package if they miss out on Donaldson? So that's a good question. I was thinking the same thing when I saw that rumor yesterday, or report, I guess you would call it, that the Twins were actively pursuing trade options in the event that they don't end up signing Donaldson. And to me, I was actually thinking more about Brandon Belt as a corner infield fit for them as opposed to Longoria. I think they, the Twins and their fans, would probably be pretty disappointed if they ended up, you know, going from dreams of, you know, Bumgarner and Donaldson, and they ended up with Samardzija and Longoria. I just don't think that Jeff Samardzija has nearly as much value as probably the mainstream baseball fan might think, and I'm not saying that's any of you listening, but I just don't think that teams are buying that 3.52 ERA for the reasons that I described on a recent show talking about the likelihood of major regression from Samardzija. So 1 year of Samardzija for, like, what is it, $19 million plus 3 years of Longoria, who's already 34 and owed roughly $15 million a year. I just think both of those contracts are significantly underwater at this point in time, and especially projecting ahead for Longoria. So they may be interested. They may be willing to, like, take on those contracts, but I don't think they're going to give you much in return for that type of package. So I think the Giants would have to pay a lot of that money, which they could do. That's another way they could use their financial flexibility and space before they would be penalized for additional spending. They could pay the entirety of Samardzija's deal and half the Longoria deal and still be very comfortable. And then maybe you could get some interesting prospects in return. I just think the Twins are going to aim higher. They're probably more interested in the likes of Chris Bryant and Nolan Arenado as opposed to settling. I think that's probably one of their last resorts, would be a Longoria-Samardzija package. But it's definitely possible. I mean, it does fit their team needs, in a sense. M. Hurley 16 asks, when do you realistically think we could see Elliot Ramos in the bigs? So Ramos is just 20 years old, first round pick of the Giants in 2017, and he ended the 2019 season, like Joey Bart, they were actually promoted together, in Double A. Very real chance, of course, that he could end up in Triple A at some point in 2020, and then he's on the doorstep. So realistically, I think he's probably a September call-up in 2020, whereas I think Bart could be one of those guys we see in May. Last question comes from Maz, who says, who do you think is most likely to be the next real ace pitcher for the Giants? A, one of the guys currently in our farm system. B, someone we sign in this year or next year's draft. Or C, a free agent we acquire after some of the promising position players establish themselves. So that's a tough one. I'm probably going to have to say a free agent just because of how hard it is to draft and develop a true ace starting pitcher. I know that pitching is stronger in this year's draft than it was in last year's draft, certainly when the Giants went very bat heavy in the draft, and I think this year it'll be the opposite. But then again, the free agent class next season, I think with the Giants maybe continuing to take some steps forward in 2020, they're going to feel probably better about adding in free agency after 2020 than they seem to at this moment in time. And I think there are some better fits in free agency. For example, Trevor Bauer is a free agent. Really like the fit with James Paxton potentially after 2020. Giants, you know, have a hard time getting position players to sign as free agents, but starting pitching really should be a little bit easier. And I think Paxton probably falls into that happy medium where he's not Gerrit Cole, who's going to command $300+ million, yet he still is a frontline starting pitcher when he's on the field and healthy. He's always getting hurt, but when he's out there, he's a, I would say, a true number one type. And then the following season, Noah Syndergaard is a free agent, as is Clayton Kershaw, Corey Kluber, Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, Zach Greinke. A lot of those guys are older, especially 2 years down the road. So it's hard to say. I mean, this is not an obvious call at all. If it's not a free agent from outside the organization, I would say the next most likely would be someone the Giants draft in 2020. But I'm not sure there's really anyone right now in their organization who has a real chance of being a true number one. So it's always easiest, perhaps, to add these guys from the outside, especially given that you have the one of the more pitcher-friendly parks in the game to call home. I think that'll help you if you really want to add one of these guys. So anyway, that is all the time we have for today. Thank you so much to everyone who submitted questions. Remember to get this show every day. You need to hit that subscribe button if you haven't done so already. Once again, my name is Ben Caspick. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Caspick. If you like this show, please consider rating it, leaving a review, and telling your friends and family to check us out. I cannot wait to be with you again tomorrow, and until then, we'll see you next time.